1-800-449-8686. Now, Phil Hendry.
So you're watching television with you're watching the war with your mother?
Yeah, Phil, I live with my mother, and it's a problem that I think a lot of Americans are having with family members. I am a former member of the conservatives of Kern County, former chairman over there.
I know, and you have left that group now a couple of years?
Because when I moved down to Los Angeles, that's right. But I've been a lifelong Republican, and I've been an avid, and I do mean an avid supporter of this conflict in Iraq. And the problem I have is that during the course of the war, as Mother and I watched television together, she would have opinions that were completely wrong and that were very misinformed. And I live with Mother for two reasons, because, as you know, Phil, Debbie and I separated, and also Mother needs a little bit of looking after.
By the way, I want to tell everybody we're talking with Larry Grover. Larry is a former chairman of Conservatives of Kern County and Republican activist in here in the state of California. What is your mother saying that you say she's offering opinions while the two of you watch the war?
Well, yes, and most of them were wrong, and I think it's indicative of something that that frightens me a little bit.
Well, what, for instance, what would she say?
Well, we'd be sitting watching. She'd say things like, you know, she thought the Marines were places that the Army was. The Army was places the Marines were. She'd get the towns mixed up. And every time I would correct her, she would ignore me. And I'd say, Mother, I've been a lifelong Republican, and I'm a supporter of President Bush. And if anyone has the facts about this war, I do. And she would ignore me, and she'd go on about who was involved. She thought the Australians were in Basra, and, of course, the British were in Basra.
Well, then she got some things wrong, right? I mean,
that's not the problem. The problem is that when I corrected her, Mother had no respect for my knowledge of this war. I'm a lifelong Republican. I'm an avid supporter of President Bush, and she would tell me that I didn't know what I was talking about. And she would say things like, if she wanted the right information, she watched Greta Van Susteren, and this is Mother, my own mother, who I've sacrificed the company of my wife and other women to be here and support her. All right, and when I talk to her about...
All right, but what does all of this indicate to you, Larry? Because if you're sitting, you're watching television with your mom, and she disagrees with the things that you say, and you feel that you're more of an expert...
I did not use the word expert, Phil.
What I meant to say was you feel you're more...
knowledgeable.
All right, knowledgeable than her.
That's right.
All right, what do you think that this represents?
Well, again, Phil, I've been a lifelong Republican. I followed Mr. Bush's career from day one. I certainly have more information about it than Mother, and yet she disrespects, and I'm worried. I'm concerned because this behavior started during the war, and I think she has some kind of a breakdown, or she's had a breakdown, and it might be time for me to look for a place for her.
All right, but see, this is what I'm worried about. That is a big step, you know, to make her live in a retirement home. And is this because she disagrees with how you see the war?
Well, look, Phil, it's not a small thing. I have read up on the... I've stayed abreast of the news on MSNBC, on Fox, on CNN. I've read all of the Newsweeks. I've read all of the Time magazines. And I also do some of the chat rooms. I don't know if you do those, but I debate people in the chat rooms, and I absolutely destroy them. I destroyed a guy last night in one of the chat rooms in a debate about the Iraq war. And yet here in my own home, my knowledge is disregarded with a wave of a hand, and she'll get it with another, I'm going to go get another cup of coffee remark. She's up and out of the chair. And it's funny, Phil, it's the same chair that my father sat in when he was alive, and I got the same kind of disapproval from my father. And yet my father had the wherewithal to have the decency to stay within his own wits. But Mother, I think, is... it's a tough decision, and I know a lot of Americans are dealing with it.
All right, Larry Grover with us here at number 1-800-449-8686. But you're thinking about putting your mother in a retirement home and the indication that she needs... Do you feel she's senile?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Well, the indication that you feel she's senile is that she doesn't respect your knowledge of the Iraq war.
Well, it's not as if she's not respecting, let's say... just Joe Blow's knowledge of the Iraq war. She doesn't respect my knowledge of the Iraq war. And I have read up all the Newsweeks. I have seen all the Fox and CNN polls. I've read Newsweek and everything.
So you're thinking, in other words, of having your mother put in a retirement home.
I think it is a clear sign of senility when your mother and father start disagreeing with you and your politics. And I say to all the elderly people out there, If you don't want to get shipped off to the house, try to agree with your kids and the things that they say.
All right, 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. Larry Grover with us, longtime political analyst on our show. You know, I think what you've got here, Larry, are a couple of things. You're talking about the war in Iraq and your knowledge of it, and then the need to put your mother in a retirement home because she's disagreeing with you.
She does not respect my opinion about the war in Iraq.
Well, so far you've given me not a whole lot. I mean,
well, Phil, what do you mean not a whole lot?
Well, you're telling me you're watching CNN and you're reading Newsweek, right?
I've been in all the chat rooms. I absolutely, and let me tell you a little bit about chat rooms if I could.
Please, because I don't know much about them. I don't go in them.
All right, let me tell you about chat rooms. You go into a chat room and you log on, and I don't want to say what my username is because then people will know who I am, but I will go into the chat room and then I will debate people, and I destroy people in there when they talk about the Iraq war and these kinds of things. And there hasn't been one time, either on a message board or in a chat room, that I haven't destroyed people with my opinions. And some of these people will say stupid things like there's no weapons of mass destruction. And I'll say, really, well, why do they have chemical soups, stupid? And that shuts them down cold. Or I will say things like, people will say this. They'll say, where is the proof that Saddam has a tie to terror training camps? And I'll say, Abu Abbas, you idiot. And it just completely destroys them. That's why I have the ability. And if you can't see that, that's fine. But my mother, who raised me and who nurtured me, and then I'll talk to her about it, and she'll disregard with a wave of her hand, and she loves to say this, I'm going to go get another cup of coffee, and then she has a habit of doing this. She'll hand me her empty cup and say, hey, Larry, go get yourself a nice cup of shut the hell up, which I think is disrespectful.
All right, I know you're emotional.
I just think it's disrespectful. And those are the nights I go to where I sleep and put the pillow over my face and scream.
All right, where do you sleep? Where do you have a room?
I actually right now, Phil, because space is tight at Mother's house, I sleep out on the service porch. I have a cot there, but we've made it very comfortable. It's very nice, but I will go to the cot sometimes and just put the pillow over my face and scream.
Do you...
Well, look, let me ask you something. An old woman... would have anything intelligent to say about the war, I seriously doubt.
All right, 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. Some of you may be living with elderly parents. Are they disagreeing with your opinion about the war, and do you feel that is a sign of senility? That's what we're talking with Larry Grover about. He lives with his mother. She's a 76-year-old woman, a widow. They live together, and Larry's there to help take care of her, I guess, but he also separated from his wife. And apparently, she doesn't respect his opinion about this war in Iraq, and he thinks it could be a sign that she's losing her ability to take care of herself. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686, pure exhibitionism.
And now more on the Phil Hendry Show.
The Iraq War, like most news events, provides our families with an opportunity to sit and discuss the event that we see on TV as a family. Larry Grover is the chairman, former chairman of Conservatives of Kern County. He's a lifetime Republican activist here in the state of California. He also lives with his... What is your mother's name, by the way?
Phil, my mother is Marjorie.
Okay, and you live with your mother... And you have found that while the two of you have watched this coverage of the war in Iraq, she doesn't respect your knowledge of it.
No, she does not, and that's fine. But I think when it's expressed privately, it's just troubling. But when it's expressed publicly, I think it's embarrassing. I can tell you I had the company of a young lady here at our house about 2 weeks ago, And we sat down to watch the news with Mother, and suddenly Mother blurts out, God, I hate those Iranians. Iranians. And again, let me repeat, because obviously Iran is not Iraq. And she said this in front of a woman that I was feeling very warmly towards. I was mortified that Mother would say, Iranian, the war is about Iraq. And when I corrected her, she humiliated me in front of the young lady by saying again that line, why don't you go get yourself a cup of shut the hell up? She gave me the empty cup. And I said, Mother, and I regret this film, and I'm going to tell you what I said. I said, Mother, G-D it, and I won't say the words. And
no, well, I understand. I understand.
I said, G-D you for saying that to me in front of this young lady. And the young lady fled our house. And that's when I realized that she needed to be, I think she needs to be in a locked facility. I seriously do.
Now, hold on a minute. My father had to be in a locked facility. My father had a serious dementia.
I think she needs to be locked down.
But you understand when you put an old person in a locked facility, they're in there with psychotics. All right?
Well, I'm afraid she's going to continue this behavior.
All right. 1-800-449-8686. Marcos, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show, sir.
Yeah, how you doing?
Yes, sir.
I think it's wrong that somebody would put their mother in a home just because they disagree on a political point. I think it's wrong. It doesn't show a lot of character on that person. I know that you were a Republican and you have knowledge of the war, but I still think that it is wrong to put somebody at that age somewhere that she's not used to because of a political point of view.
Well, Marcos, I'm sure there are things that you know more about than I do, and if I tried to pretend like you didn't know as much as me, wouldn't you feel like I needed to be put away in an area where I wouldn't be a danger to others?
No, not under that point, just because she disagrees with you.
May I ask you where you're from, sir?
Yeah, Miami.
Well, but what country of origin are you?
I was born in Manhattan. My mother is Puerto Rican.
All right. If I tried to tell you about Puerto Rico, why, you'd know more about it than me. And if I didn't respect you, you'd be within your rights to want to put me away in a locked facility with 24-hour lockdown.
No, because
what?
You disagree on me.
Why, just because you don't know anything about Puerto Rico?
Well, why do I have the right to tell this man something he knows intimately?
No,
I must be crazy.
Everybody's got their point, and, you know, it should be respect. I'm
right.
Not saying she should respect you, but what I'm saying is that putting somebody on a home is a big decision.
Marcos, can I give you an idea of what, and Mr. Henry, you and your listeners, last night Mother said this. We were watching the Fox News report. We enjoy watching Greta Van Susteren, and last night I heard my own mother say this. I sure like what Timmy Franks has done. And at that point, I couldn't stand it any longer, and I said, you stupid old, and I used a obscenity, it's Tommy Franks, not Timmy Franks, you piece of, and you can imagine it's a four-letter word, it starts...
I understand, so you used an obscenity.
Yes, I did.
Well, how old are you, sir?
I'm 38.
And the lady, your mom?
My mother is 76 years of age. She had me rather late in her 20s.
So we have to have a little respect for the elderly, you know,
yeah,
they've got their own life.
Just because she called him Timmy Franks.
Phil, how can someone who called...
And by the way, Marcos, I'll let you go. Thank you for your call, sir. 1-800-449-8686. What?
How can someone say that I don't know anything about the Iraq War, and this is my own mother, and then turn around and call the Supreme Allied Commander of the entire coalition operation Timmy Franks, when the man's name is clearly Tommy Franks, and, Mother, could you turn that down, please? Then the man's name is Tommy Franks. These are the things that drive me wild.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. Darren, go ahead.
Hello?
Darren, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. I'm sorry, your name is Grover, is that right?
My name's Larry Grover, sir. Yes, sir.
Larry Grover. Larry, I guess I have a problem with the fact that you definitely don't respect your own mom.
I live with my mother. I try to take care of her every need.
I understand that. But if I said any of that stuff to my mother, that would have her lose respect for me. So I don't understand what you expect her to.
Well, I want her to acknowledge that I know way more about the Iraq War than she does. She thinks she knows more about it than me, but she called him Timmy Franks.
Right, but I guess my question is, you're a lifelong Republican.
Yes,
that's what you kept on saying over and over again. What do Republicans fight for? They fight for freedom. Freedom of speech for one of them.
Well, obviously, but we also want to take care of our loved ones if they're losing their minds.
Exactly.
If your mother was losing her mind, wouldn't you want her in a locked facility? Of course you would.
My mother is
slowly coming untethered from the world of reality.
I don't think she's losing her mind. I think she's an older woman.
Not losing her mind.
Fine.
She said to me, what was the thing that I mentioned to you, Phil? She said to me that she thought that the Iranians we were at war with. Can you believe that?
Well,
so what? A lot of people make that mistake.
My grandmother is around 80 years old. I'm a little younger than you. My grandmother is around 80 years old, and she says things like that all the time. I'm not going to put her in a lockup facility.
Yeah, you can't put her in a locked facility.
Well, I've got to do something, and one of the things that I have learned down through the years, mother, of course, being my mother, I wasn't able to take care, to assert myself, but sometimes I need to give her a sponge bath, and I can certainly heat that water up to a very uncomfortable temperature.
Whoa. Now what are you talking about?
I'm sorry?
Yeah.
Now what are you talking about?
I have to be able to express my anger, don't I?
Can somebody try
hurting her now?
No, just a very hot sponge bath, just a little bit of a scald. I also, let me tell you something, Darren. This is the humiliation that I've got to go through with Mother. Do you realize I am 38 years of age and sometimes I've got to wipe her because she's too old to...
Well, then she does need a nursing home.
That's what I said.
Then she does. Yeah. If you've got to do that, then...
Well, I'm not saying that I have to. Sometimes I offer to.
Wait, what?
This is getting a little weird.
It's weird, man. What do you mean offer?
Wait a minute. What are you two guys suggesting?
What are we suggesting? We're saying, what are you talking about? You offer to wipe her.
My mother is 76 years of age. I don't think she can be expected with arthritis.
If she needs a nursing home, then she needs a nursing home. If she doesn't need a nursing home, what are you doing wiping her?
You guys are walking up to it, but you're not crossing the line and saying exactly what you're trying to say.
Well, here, I'll say it, Larry. Quite honestly, I think that you definitely have a problem.
It sounds like
your mom definitely needs to, or not definitely, but possibly needs to be in a nursing home.
Okay, thank you.
But that doesn't make her have to go into a lockup facility. That doesn't make her have to be wiped down by you without her even asking.
Yeah, man. If she's, get her to a nursing home, you're wiping her down without asking.
Well, sometimes she wants to come into the bathroom and see what's in the toilet. And
then the woman needs to be, she's flaky. But it's not because she disagrees. Can somebody turn that TV down?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know.
Mom, could you turn that down, please? No, Phil, all I'm saying is...
Is that your mother there?
Yeah.
So you're talking about this in front of her?
Oh, she doesn't... See, that's what I mean. She doesn't get it.
All right, look, Darren, thank you for your call.
Yeah,
well, then maybe she is flaky.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. She ignores me. She doesn't listen to what I say.
But that's not the same as saying she needs to be in a nut bin. She needs to be in a nut bin because you feel she may be a danger to herself.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say. And
that TV is on too loud.
Turn it down, Mother. That's what I'm saying, Phil. And all I need is for people to understand that I know about the Iraq War because I've been in chat rooms and I've absolutely destroyed people.
I got that, and you've been on message boards too. Hold on. Larry Grover, former chairman of Conservatives of Kern County, anti-war, and his mother needs to be put in a nursing home, he thinks, because she disagrees with him. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686.
Phil Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
I'm joined by Larry Grover, former chairman of Conservatives of Kern County, a Republican Party activist. He's living here in the Los Angeles area right now, and we're talking about the war in Iraq and actually, we're talking a little bit about a problem you've got at home with your own mother who disagrees with a lot of what you say, even though you've made the claim that you're very, you know, knowledgeable of the war. And I don't doubt that you're knowledgeable on the war, Larry.
Well, I think what you don't want to do, Phil, is qualify it, because the audience, your listeners, are going to perceive me to be someone, believe me, I am an avid supporter of the president's action in Iraq. I am so overjoyed when I look at the whole situation. I have been in chat rooms. I've been on message boards. I have destroyed people in chat rooms.
You keep saying you've destroyed people in chat, like in debates?
I've just absolutely had them running screaming from me on message boards. And the like. So when mother disrespects me, I got to think something's wrong.
All right, and that's where you say you need to put her in a home. Here is Keith, 1-800-449-8686. Keith, go ahead.
Yeah, Phil, this is Keith. I'm a Gulf War vet.
Yes, sir.
I served my time in the first Gulf War, and I hear this guy on there talking about he's an expert and he knows so much about the war. I got one question for you, Larry. How much combat time have you served? How much time do you serve for your country?
Well, you say you were in the Gulf War. How do we know you were? And you're not just claiming that to sound like you're a big shot.
Oh, it doesn't matter about that. I mean, I can tell you my unit. I was in the 1-8 Cav and 4th ID, Fort Carson, Colorado.
I believe you, Keith.
March 4th, 90.
I believe you,
okay?
Keith. I believe Keith.
All right.
The bottom line is,
you're
listening to the American propaganda on TV. If you haven't been there and don't know what's going on and been there firsthand, you don't know what's going on other than what the government's telling you. And
Wait a second. Are you trying to say that your government, your commander-in-chief, is lying to you?
No, they're not lying, but they ain't telling you what's going on as it happens, sir.
Well, it's
kind of like this. We got American soldiers on the ground right now. If they showed exactly what was happening when it happened, our American lives would be online, just like it was when we were there the first time. My wife videotaped it. Showed me videotapes, and it's like, baby, we weren't even there. That tape's about 2 weeks old. We were gone and out of the area. You're talking about American propaganda, talking about chat rooms? Come on, man, you're an embarrassment to the Republican Party.
Talking about what?
You are an embarrassment to the Republican Party.
I've destroyed people in chat rooms.
You couldn't destroy nothing. Your knowledge is limited.
Well, hold on for a minute.
Your knowledge is only what you've been told.
The war, first of all, is his name Timmy Franks or Tommy Franks?
Does it matter?
Yeah, my mother said it was Timmy Franks. It made me want to cry.
His name could be Billy Bob Doohickey as long as he is controlling the war and is getting done the way it's supposed to be done.
I buried my face in a pillow and screamed when I heard that. How could she be so impertinent?
Dude, check this out. The way you talk to your mother, she should give you more than just a cup of shut the hell up. She ought to give you a handful of smack the hell down.
Well,
that's
Mr.
what you need is, you know, a handful of smack the hell down.
Mr. Henry is laughing, and I'm sure the audience thinks you're funny, but, sir, I can assure you, I don't think... I told mother that Saddam's half-brother was found, and you know what she said to me? She said, I know, stupid. This is the kind of disrespect. This is the...
Well, look, if she knew, she knew.
That's your mother, though, dude. She ought to give you a handful of smack the hell down for talking to her that way.
All I do is pick up after her, clean the saliva off of her cups of coffee and plates.
And want a wipe for her. What kind of stuff is that, man?
No kidding.
You are an embarrassment to the Republican Party, dude.
Sir,
and I can't believe you're right. Being in California, I'm a trucker out here on the road. That you bring out the exact land of the fruits and the nuts, wanting to wipe your mother's butt. Oh, my God.
Sir, I can tell
you are a disgrace, dude.
Sir,
it's really, Larry, you're the guy that ought to be looked at for a nut bin.
Well, okay, hold on for a minute, because mother, I offered a nice gesture to wipe her rear end, and she called me a perv.
She should have called the police on you. She should have had you arrested.
So you two guys are getting your giggles now. Is that what I'm hearing?
Oh,
yeah.
You're nasty, man. You're straight up loped out, man. There's no way you could have held office in Kern County. If they did, oh my God.
Well, look, so now I'm a walking, I guess I'm a joke.
Larry, you offer to wipe your own mother's rear end. Yeah, you become a joke.
I did it because she's a 76-year-old woman with arthritis.
Phil, I love mother. Phil, I love your show, but this guy is a disgrace to even call himself a Republican.
I am an avid supporter.
Hey, Larry.
Yeah?
Go get yourself a cup and shut the hell up, okay?
Hey,
you know something?
Grab you a handful of smack the hell down, too.
Hey, why don't you get a handful of this right here?
I know you'd like me to, but guess what? We don't go that way. We ain't from California.
Oh, so now you're calling me a queer on top of everything else.
Yeah, I think so.
Wanting to wipe your mother's... I wouldn't put nothing past you.
That don't make me queer.
No, you're right, man. You're straight.
Yeah.
If you want to wipe your own mother's rear end, you're straight.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Okay.
Straight as a broken arrow.
Well, both of you gentlemen...
Hey, Phil, I appreciate you having me on.
I need to be wiped down, Larry.
Come on, mother.
On behalf of the
thank you.
Of the Gulf War to really know what's going on, the president's doing a great job, and this clown, he ain't got a freaking clue what's going on.
Well, I think it's a clear sign of senility when your mother hands you an empty cup and says, get a cup and shut the hell up. Doesn't she mean coffee?
No, she means...
give you a swift kick in the, you know, hey.
Right in the...
You were going to say ball sack, weren't you?
Hey, you know,
okay.
Whatever hits the fuck. You couldn't tell the difference between... This is my point when I asked you if you ever been and served your country. You couldn't tell the difference between an Iraqian and Manuel the Taco Bender on the corner. That's the bottom line.
So in other words, you're calling me an idiot.
Yeah.
You're an idiot.
So you guys have called me queer, you've called me an idiot, you've called me a perv.
Yes,
well,
that's
you know
exactly.
If the shoe fits, wear it and wear it proudly. And I guarantee you, brother, all the listeners are listening, you are wearing it so proudly. But the bad part about it is you call yourself a Republican. Man, you need to just hook up with old Billy and just be partners with him.
I can tell you guys this much, that apparently you've completely distorted and misrepresented my position.
Oh, come on, Larry. I offered to wipe mother's butt. Thanks a lot, Keith. See you later.
I appreciate you getting the airtime.
Bye-bye, yeah.
Yeah. Back at you, good buddy. See, he's a trucker, ain't he?
I know. What the hell?
Mother, turn it down. Oh, wait a minute. I like this episode. This is where Beaver...
Well, forget it. Guys watching the Beaver Telethon. 1-800-449-8686. You're listening to The Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. Vagisil for the mind.
Phil Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
All right. Don't forget the Phil Henry website, philhenryshow.com. And if you go to that website, you'll find out interesting things. Like, for instance, it was me that did the voice there of Larry Grover in that last bit, even though those folks called in thinking he was a real guy. And, yeah, that's just kind of how I get my kicks. All right. Our website is philhenryshow.com. Go there. Get our audio archives by getting a backstage pass. You can hear all of the audio archived there, whether it's a full day's worth of shows, or it's a smaller form comedy bit, or you want to live stream the show wherever you are on demand. You need a backstage pass, and the good news, it's only $6.95 a month. $6.95 a month for a backstage pass gets you into our audio section, and also the video section of our website, because occasionally we do webcasts and we archive those webcasts so you can see what I look like or whatever, you know, whatever your kick is. Go to our souvenir shop and pick up some Phil Henry souvenirs. You can get a Citizens Auxiliary Police travel mug. This is a gorgeous travel mug. It's, what is that made out of anyway? Is it steel or something? Stainless steel? We also have a black and white coffee or latte mug. This isn't your standard radio station mug. This is a real cool Italian, kind of a gay-looking thing, but it's good. And then we also have our Ted's of Beverly Hills bowling shirt, etc. So do it today. Tim Robbins was talking in front of the National Press Club yesterday or the day before, saying that he was being censored. Anybody notice the irony in that, or am I the only guy? He's being censored, but he's standing in front of the National Press Club talking about being censored. I don't... Far be it for me to understand, I'm just a dumbass on the radio. But it seems to me... And the other thing that I sort of resent, now I'm beginning to resent him just a little bit because of this. I think in his mind, he sees a connection between himself and the Hollywood Ten. Now, if you don't know who the Hollywood Ten were, they were a collection of Hollywood writers, producers, who were called before the House Un-American Activities Committee to testify about possible connections to the Communist Party. It was a time, and let me just describe this to you. You guys will get this perfectly when I give you this description. It was a time when being called a communist was exactly like today being called a child molester. Exactly. You were that much of a piece of crap. So now you understand why people were reluctant to say that they had been a member of the Communist Party. Those who actually did say that they were brave men and women who said, hey, you know what? It wasn't against the law. I was a young person at the time. And will you name other people who were? No, I will not. I will not name names. Well, these people were blacklisted and they were driven out of the business. Of course, that's not happening to Tim Robbins, although he would like to think that it looks like it is, because the greatest thing that could happen to Tim Robbins would be if he were to be somehow in the popular mind associated with the great old grand romantic days of the Hollywood Ten, anti-McCarthyism, and all that cool stuff. Give it up, Tim. You're just a big, tall, good-looking movie star, man, and everybody wants to see your movies, and ain't nobody not going to hire you. You and your girlfriend. Anyway, we had the great opportunity yesterday of interviewing Tim Robbins. I'd like to go back to that. I think you'll enjoy it.
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy gold.
Philosophically, I disagree with a lot of things that you say, Mr. Robbins, but I do thank you for being on my program.
Thank you, Phil.
And by the way, I am a big fan of your movies.
I appreciate that.
But I have to say, you've been making kind of a fool out of yourself here recently with your views about Iraq and you sort of traveling around the country feeling persecuted. I mean, where did you get this persecution complex from?
You know, it comes from the fact, Phil, that as an actor, I generally just talk to people and they don't answer back, especially when you do movies. You just talk to them and they don't answer back. But since I've been speaking my mind, which is really not my mind on the war, people are actually disagreeing with me. And that's kind of a new experience. It's kind of an interesting experience. I've never...
You never had anybody disagree with you before?
No, I never have. Everyone says, hi, Mr. Robbins, how are you? It's a great movie. Yes, Mr. Robbins. Oh, yeah, Arlington Road was fantastic. Things like that. And so I just... it's kind of new for me, but I hope I'm getting used to it.
Well, it doesn't look like you're getting used to it. It looks like you... Yesterday, you were addressing the press club and you were singling out Clear Channel. Why?
Well, because Clear Channel has talk show hosts that disagree with what I say. And it hurts my feelings. I went home and cried. And I just feel bad. Hold on for a minute. Susan,
God.
I was, she's fooling around.
Okay.
One of the things that I wanted to say was that I'd like to express my views about Iraq and not have anyone disagree with me. That's all I'm asking. I think it's reasonable, and I'm going to give the American people 30 days to think about it, or I'll never make another movie.
Is it possible, sir, that that is not a threat, but a promise that we hope is fulfilled?
You mean nobody wants...
Yeah, no one would want to see you in another movie.
Well, that's possible, yeah. But, again, you can't disagree with me. I'm a film actor, and I'm not used to it. The other things that I... Would you stop that, please? Would you stop that, please?
Is that Miss Sarandon?
Yeah. Would you stop it? The other thing... Would you stop that, please? Would you stop that, please? I hit her.
You didn't hit a woman.
Yes, I did. She's a pain.
What is it with you and her, anyway? She's, what, like 10, 15 years older?
I had a mother thing for a while. You know how guys are. That whole MILF thing. It's getting a little thin now, though. Anyway, what I wanted to say was... by the way, just because I'm tall doesn't mean it's...
Yeah, I understand.
Now, a lot of people who... Hold on for a minute. You stinking... Yeah. Yeah. So I said what I said to the press club, Phil, because it hurts my feelings when people disagree with me.
Now, the way you were also... I listened to that press club speech. It sounded like you thought you were president of the United States, the way you were talking.
I have had a fantasy about... running for office, and I did want to sound as stentorian as I could, sort of a... Who did I sound like to you?
Well, it sounded like Franklin Roosevelt.
Yeah, I was hoping Kennedy. But in any event, I wanted to impress people, and I hope I did.
Well, Tim, let me just say this. Just some advice for you. express your opinions. Take the criticism with good humor. People will disagree with you, okay?
They really will.
Yes, they will. You can't stop it from happening. They're going to disagree with you. And some people may not want to invite you into their home because of the things you believe. But if it makes you feel any better, I threw somebody out of my house once who was from Canada, and they were criticizing our country.
Uh-huh.
I threw them out of my house, and they were a very good friend of my wife. So, you know, these things... Is that her again?
Yeah. You think you're funny? You're not funny. No, I understand, Phil. I just... what I want to say more than anything else is that when people disagree with me, I call it fascism. When I disagree with them, I call it freedom of speech. What do you think of that?
That's really impressive. Why don't you put that on a napkin or something?
Yeah, I'm going to embroider that maybe on a doily. But I'm gonna... Forget it. Never mind.
All right, I'm sorry, Tim.
Yeah, I got to deal with it. I'll see you later, Phil.
All right, Tim Robbins. Can we cut the connection to his house, please?
I told you. I'm going to kick your ass!
Can we cut the connection to his house?
Stop it! Stop it!
Thank you.
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy Gold.
Yeah, it's just, I'm glad we were able to nail down that interview with Mr. Robbins. You're right at the end there. I never get my son doing that with my other son. Stop it! Tim Robbins and Ms. Sarandon. Is that Ms. Sarandon? Oh, yes, it is. All right, 1-800-449-8686. You're listening to The Phil Hendry Show. And by the way, if you want to learn more about the Hollywood 10, you can find it in your public library. Or on the internet if you'd like. The Hollywood 10 were Herbert Biberman, Martin Popper. Well, I don't know who the hell the Hollywood 10 were. Now I'm reading the list of their attorneys. It was actually Dalton Trumbo, John Howard Lawson, Alva Bessie, Samuel Ornitz, Ring Lardner Jr., Edward Dimitrik, Adrian Scott. And these men were convicted, and I guess the other guys were too. But they were all convicted of contempt of Congress because they refused to answer questions like, can you name names of other people? And they said, no, we will not. Now, you may recall a guy by the name of Ilya Kazan. He named names. That's why a lot of people hate him. Me, I don't hate the guy because I wasn't alive back then. I don't know what the guy went through. And... but then again, I understand people that don't dig him. And there are a lot of people who were around then that hate his guts. But that's that, you know. And that was the end of that. Tim Robbins trying to hook up with this. Why don't you make a movie about it, man? All right, 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Hendry Show.
We're very pleased to welcome onto our program a Korean War veteran and a man who started an organization called Veterans for Veterans, Lloyd Bonafide. Mr. Bonafide is with us to talk about his organization, an organization that helps returning combat veterans readjust to society. You were a combat veteran and are, Mr. Bonafide, and your organization, I guess, will be looking at the returning Iraqi war veterans and how you might serve them.
Yes, Mr. Henry, that is correct, and I thank you for allowing me on to talk about this very important problem, the need here in America to be careful with our returning veterans. These are young men who have been through something that most of you and your listeners haven't even dreamt of going through, and it's a thing called war. And war can change a man. It can change him from being a loving and caring and considerate person to many times a blind animal with bloodlust who is barely human. And other men, it can make them uncaring and hard. some men have no tethering to normal instinct, and so what we try to do is help them.
So you are saying that there needs to be a sort of a decompression period, correct?
Well, I don't know about a lot of these terms. What we used to call it, we used to say just handle with care is what we used to say. And see, what you have, Mr. Henry, with a lot of the returning Iraq veterans, just like the returning Korean and Vietnam and World War II and what have you, these men are individual. If you look at them, they're like individual time bombs. And no one knows what the timer is set at, but it can go off at any time. And some men, it'll go off soon after they arrive. Other men, it'll take time. An Iraq veteran, much like any other war veteran, may be home with his wife and child. And he may be embracing that wife and child for the first time since he's been to war. And suddenly, and it can happen in an instant, his wife or his child's face can turn into the face of Saddam Hussein or an Iraqi that he had hand-to-hand combat with. And the only thing that at that moment that he wants to do is, rather than love that woman or that child, is to take a bayonet and drive it right into their face. And
good God.
Well, these are the realities. So while we welcome back our heroes, we want people to know how to deal with them.
Well, let's set people's minds at rest. If a woman or a family member out there has a returning Gulf War veteran, they're not going to... Don't be afraid of them, right?
No, you don't want to be afraid of them. But, look, I'd be happy to tell you a little bit about the flyer that we have that tells you how to deal with people.
Well, this is a flyer that you're sending around. I know a lot of American Legion halls. You're going to send them to those places that deal with veterans. Let's go through this so that people know what to, I guess, so people can keep this in mind should they have a returning veteran member.
All right. Phil, first is the first part we think is the most important part. It's called family. And if you're a member of a returning veteran's family, the first thing that you want to do is try and be as considerate as possible. And
well, give me an example.
Well, just to give an example, if you're his wife, or you're someone in the family, and he says, will you make me a sandwich? Just make the sandwich. Don't...
Just make it, right? Don't argue.
Well, the last thing, many women these days are tempted to say, well, make it yourself because of all the women's liberation. And I will tell you right now, telling a veteran to make his own sandwich shortly after he returns from a combat theater is the quickest way it's the quickest way to get a bayonet in the face that I know of.
You could be scaring some people.
I don't want to scare anyone. These are common sense. Veterans are not like other people. I'm a combat veteran. I've lived this, and that's why we started this organization.
I want to get into your personal experience, Mr. Bonafide, your experience in Korea coming home to your family. Our number is 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. We are going to have a number of returning vets, of the veterans of the Gulf, of this Iraq conflict. How many would you say are actual combat veterans?
I don't know. I think the number was about 120,000 were in the theater there, actually in the combat theater. I don't know of that 120 how many saw actual close quarters combat or were involved in any kind of a firefight, but I can tell you it's a significant number. And this is the toughest part, Phil, when they go out into the world, because you don't know if a man is a veteran of Iraq or not. And if you're out at the grocery store or standing in line at a bank, you want to look to find out if you're dealing with a veteran. And one of the things we talk about is the thousand-yard stare. If you see a man...
What is the thousand-yard stare?
A man who looks beyond you and is looking for the enemy, the other thing is what we call the goggle tan. And that's the goggles, the sand goggles they wore, created a tan line where only the forehead and the lower part of the face. That is a very, very easy way of saying that.
All right, suppose we are out in the world and we encounter an Iraqi veteran.
Well, if you encounter an Iraq veteran, what we tell people who call us is you never, ever, and this is so very important, never make direct eye contact with any veteran unless you want a trip to the hospital. If you want a trip to the hospital, go ahead and look an Iraq veteran in the eye. Never make direct eye contact with a veteran. And my wife knows this about me.
Well, you're a Korean War veteran. Are you saying that your wife, in all the years of your marriage, has never made direct eye contact with you?
Let me tell you something, pal. Before you find that strange, my wife's too busy looking at what else I got. Okay? My wife's too busy looking at what else I have before, and I won't go any further into that.
All right. 1-800-449-8686. Talking to Lloyd Bonafide of the Veterans for Veterans organization. You're saying that returning Iraq veterans could be dangerous.
What I'm saying is any returning veteran could be dangerous.
My father was a World War II veteran, and I always looked him in the eye.
Was he a combat veteran?
Yes, he was.
But I heard you say once your father was in the Canadian Army, and that's another experience. I'm talking about the U.S. Army.
Well, I don't know what the difference is.
All I'm saying is don't be stupid when the Iraq veterans come home. These celebrations with the ribbons and the flags are another way of getting yourself, having your throat ripped from your neck by an angry Iraq veteran.
And what do the ribbons and the balloons do?
Well, in combat theater, they use smoke pods with blue or with green or yellow smoke, and it can let you know whether it's a hot landing zone. And a lot of the streamers and the ribbons and the balloons remind our veterans of that. So you may be throwing a big, wonderful party, and all you're doing is inviting disaster. So what started out as a joyous, festive celebration with balloons and banners could wind up with a whole lot of bodies on the ground, because that vet is having a hard time.
All right. You're telling us a lot here. A lot of it's very scary.
Well, I don't want anyone to be afraid. Just don't look at. He's a veteran. Don't put your hands on him. Don't look him in the eye, unless you want a quick trip to the hospital.
You know, I don't know how many people know combat veterans. I said my dad was a combat veteran, but I guess that doesn't count. He was in the Canadian Army.
Well, I just don't know what kind of firefights those guys got into.
Well, they fought the Germans. I guess that's just as much as anybody. But the fact is, there is this idea that veterans are potentially dangerous people.
Well, it is true to an extent, Phil. Let me tell you about myself. My grandson laughed at me once because I was wearing my old Navy uniform. I wanted to see if I could get into it. And I walked out, and there was a 5-year-old boy who said, "You look like Donald Duck," because we wore the old. And I remember saying to myself, boy, is he asking for it. Ooh, boy. And I held on, and I held on. And were it not for self-control, I would have reached for his neck. But I can tell you that because of that experience, I've started Veterans for Veterans.
All right, Lloyd, hold on. Mr. Bonafide from Veterans for Veterans. Returning Iraq veterans need to be treated with tender, loving care. And among the things that he says you shouldn't do with any returning veteran, don't look them in the eye. Too much physical contact is bad. Be respectful and just do what they ask, because underneath the surface is the potential for extreme violence, according to him. Our number is 1-800-449-8686. Just to give an example of what he said, if he asks you and you're his wife to make him a sandwich, don't argue with him, just make the sandwich. Don't pull out any women's lib stuff. It's the quickest way to get a thumb to the windpipe or a bayonet in the face. 1-800-449-8686. This is scary stuff. That's why I say to him, I don't want to get our veterans prejudiced against because of this stuff. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. You need a checkup from the neck up.
The Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
I'm with Lloyd Bonafide of the organization Veterans for Veterans. And Mr. Bonafide, you started this organization. You're a Korea War veteran. What branch of the service were you with?
Phil, I was with the United States Navy.
All right. And you were in combat?
Well, I wouldn't start the organization, sir, if it wasn't.
All right. I understand. You said that you started this organization after a near violent encounter with your grandson.
That's correct, yes.
That you almost attacked your grandson because he laughed at your Navy uniform, said you looked like Donald Duck?
You know, I don't want to drag that one out too much, but yes, he made a crack, and I remember thinking, boy, is he asking for it, and I wanted, like any veteran would want to. See, you know, you're trying to make it sound like it's weird. It's normal for a veteran to want to protect himself, and when some punk, some two-bit punk, says I look like Donald Duck, you know, there's a way of doing things, and as I said, thank God that I have a belief in a Christian God, otherwise I would have torn my own grandson's throat from his neck. And you ask any veteran, they'll tell you, when you get shipped home, that's when a whole new fight begins. That's the fight not to hurt some of these stupid civilians that you meet and some dumb slacker who, while you were in the theater of combat defending your country, was back here shagging your wife, drinking in a pool hall, and so on and so forth.
All right, I understand. 1-800-449-8686. Let's go to Annette. Annette, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Okay, I am just calling to talk to, and sir, Mr. Bonafide, I have a question for you.
Yes, dear.
Have you ever been tested or checked for what's called post-traumatic stress disorder? Because what you're saying is
well,
not...
Well, you're talking what we used to call battle fatigue. Well,
okay, battle fatigue, PTSD, doesn't matter. But you just commented in calling your son, your grandson a punk.
Well, when he makes a crack like that, he comes off like a street punk, yeah.
Okay, so he's 5 years old?
Yes, he just turned six.
Okay, so your six-year-old street punk grandson, have you... I mean, I'm just...
A little extreme for to call your grandson.
Well, hold on for just a second. As a combat veteran, you don't look at me and laugh at me.
I'm not laughing at you.
Well, no, but I'm saying this kid. Yes, he's my grandson.
He was a five-year-old. Five-year-olds do not know what they're laughing at. He looks at you and thinks of a cartoon character.
Okay,
he's not laughing at you.
See, there you go again. See, that's the kind of thing.
No, he is a five-year-old. Hey, sir, I want to say something. My father was in two world wars.
Well, God bless him.
Okay, and listen to me. He was in two world wars.
Well, that was your father. That wasn't you.
No, he was able to look me in the eye. He was able to be affectionate with me.
No,
to hold me, hold my hand.
He could look you in the eye. I'm not saying that.
You were not supposed
to look him in the eye.
Look him in the eye, and never, ever once do I think that he ever thought of me as some punk. And yeah, I've laughed at silly things that he's done.
Well, your name is Annette, right, dear?
My name is Annette.
All right, there is a facet that we talk about in our Veterans for Veterans meetings, and this is called delayed response. Many times a veteran won't want to wreak havoc on his own family members and will go out at night or when the family isn't around and do other destructive things. We think now, and the FBI agrees with us, that many serial murders are committed by vets
Wait a second. I got to interrupt you here because I followed the FBI Serial Crime Unit.
I'm not talking about watching CSI.
I'm not talking about watching CSI either. I'm talking about serial crime. Are you trying to tell me that veterans are responsible for serial murders?
No, sir. What I'm saying is destructive. They could go out and kill a dog or go out and throw rocks through windows, that kind of thing.
Why are you blanketing this whole thing? Why are you saying that every veteran is like this?
Look, I'm saying combat veterans. I didn't say every veteran.
Well, okay, every combat veteran. I know combat veterans.
I will guarantee you your father at least once stood over his sleeping daughter with a bayonet.
Oh, no,
I doubt that.
Wait a second.
Sir, I can tell you time and Mr. Henry, you say your father was a...
My dad was in North Africa and Italy during World War II.
I can tell you right now that there were nights he probably stood over your bed with his hands sweating,
wanting to rip your throat out of your neck.
Oh, come on.
Well, now, I think that's a bunch of bull.
Well, ma'am, ask any veteran. You don't have to believe me.
I think you're the one that has the problems, and I think you're the one that needs to go get some therapy or get on some medication or something.
Well, you know, all the psychobabble is fine.
Well, look at Mr. Bonafide.
Listen, why did you ask your father?
My father's been long dead, okay?
Well, what about the young lady?
Is my father is alive, and you know what? He will
at Easter dinner,
this question to ever ask him.
Do you have him over for Easter dinner or any of that kind of thing?
I have him over many times.
Ask him.
I'm very close to my father.
Well, don't get too close, because the one thing a vet doesn't want, he doesn't like a lot of physical contact.
Okay, I will argue that,
too. Do you hug him a lot?
Yes, I do.
Okay, you've got a death wish, don't you? You do.
Now look, I will tell you, Mr. Bonafide, I don't want to argue with the fact that you're a combat veteran. I don't want to argue with the fact that you have experience. But everything you're saying about vets, I think, is slanderous. Because the vets are going to come home.
Slanderous? I care about our combat veterans. And look, my wife wanted more frequent sex. I'm going to let you in on something.
We don't want to hear about your sex life.
No, I'm not going to tell you about it, but I told her we can't have more sex because I may want to kill you.
You really need some psychological help.
Well, look, you know what, Dr. Laura? Yeah, I guess you got another call coming in, huh?
No, you really
right.
do need some
yeah.
help.
All right, Annette, thank you very much.
Thank you.
1-800...
Thank you very much. What, are you going to hang up on me now?
No, I'm not hanging up on you, because there's an old saying, give a man enough rope.
Well, Mr. Henry, I'm a combat veteran. Are you?
No, sir, I am not.
Yeah, it's just what I thought. And yet you want to sit there in judgment of me and tell me my business? Now, I sit around some of these VFW halls on a Friday night, and you ought to listen to some of the stories that I hear. And there's more guys in that place that have been through the clap, the drip, every kind of...
I'm not interested in what they did extracurricularly. I'm talking about their combat experience and what it does to them when they return home.
And, sir, that's what our organization is about.
All right, hold on. 1-800-449-8686. I don't want to argue with the guy. I know that he knows more about it than I do. But to say that a returning veteran doesn't want more, physical, and don't look him in the eye or he'll want to rip your throat out of your neck. This guy says that his grandson laughed at him in his Navy uniform, and he almost, he wanted to kill his own grandson. Also, if you have a combat veteran for a father, there were many a nights when he would stand over your bed while you were asleep with a bayonet. 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show will return in a moment.
The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. He's still Jenny on the block. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
Can you tell me, Mr. Lloyd Bonafide is with us. We're talking about Veterans for Veterans, an organization he started to help returning Iraqi war veterans readjust to society. What experience for you as a veteran in combat would you say sort of traumatized you or gave you a tougher way back into society than others?
Well, Phil, for me, it was we were in Japan at the time, and we had been out, and we had been having a few drinks, and we were coming back to the ship, and I was so inebriated that I fell asleep in a Buddhist temple, if you could believe this, and they started the service, and when I woke up, I thought I was in heaven. I thought I'd bought it. And, of course, I had only been sleeping and awakened in the Buddhist temple, but I remember thinking, that's what it's like to die, to wake up and see things that are you wouldn't expect, that first of all, they were all Chinese or something, and you wouldn't expect to wake up and see literally hundreds of Chinese, and some of them with glasses, and of course, they have the oversized teeth and all of that, and then...
I'm talking about combat. Combat.
Well, in combat, we had we were dropping what are called K-21s. These are depth charges, and we were sighting a North Korean gunboat,
And we were following it. What you do is you sight it on radar and you zag it, and that is you try to follow it with depth charges.
I understand.
And so we had these K-28s rolling off the rack, and one of them come back off the P-rack and dropped and hit my foot, and I lost a toe and got the Purple Heart for that. I'll tell you something. When that happens, all you want to do is just pray to God that the thing doesn't go off, because the depth charge hit my foot, and now I'm looking at this big K-28, and I'm thinking, holy Jesus, if that thing goes off on deck, we can all get sized up for winds and harps, because there's not going to be too many of us left.
All right, 1-800-449-8686.
What do you mean, 1-800? What, you just blowing my story off?
No, sir, I'm not. I got to get to a phone call.
But what do you think about that?
I think it must have been painful to have that thing hit your foot, and I would be afraid, too, that a high explosive device like that would go off.
You better believe it. And the thing of it is, I wrote my wife, and I said, I got something cut off. And, of course, she thought I meant my thing. And I said, I'm only kidding. It was a toe. And she, it was pretty funny.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. Bill, go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Henry, I've been listening to this gentleman speak now. First, for the record, I am a combat veteran. I fought in Vietnam. I fought in Korea. I have a couple of things that just make me... I believe that this gentleman needs to turn himself into the VA hospital for psychiatric evaluation.
Oh, come on. That's what the other woman said.
Yeah, no, just a minute, sir. Let me finish speaking. You saw Chinese in a Buddhist temple in Japan. That was one
well,
thing.
You know what I'm talking about. Okay.
Wait a minute. Now, you said you're a combat veteran. Well, sir, I faced Chinese who wanted to take me and 600 other of us off a hill, and we fought for 22 days with them trying to take the hill and us trying to keep them off of it. Now, that's combat. I was also in Vietnam. I was in the Golden Triangle. I was with an intelligence unit at the time, and believe me, we got into 3 or 4 big, heavy firefights, and I lost a lot of good friends. I never
decided to kill
wait somebody or look at my grandchildren, and I've got grandchildren, and I got great-grandchildren. I had 8 children of my own. Never did I ever say I wanted to kill my wife, who looked me in the eye, and we looked in ourselves in the eye. We've been married 47 years now, looking her in the eye. You really never saw combat. If you got hurt because of, I just wonder how that happened. The depth charges I'm aware of off of a destroyer come off a roll off the end, or they shot off with the Y, and so I don't know how that happened.
It was while they were loading ordnance. It happens all the time. And let me tell you something.
You nearly never had somebody shoot at you, and you were shooting back at them.
Can I say something here, Mr. Henry?
Go ahead.
Let me tell you something, my friend. You get one of those charges sitting right there underneath your you-know-what, and it's ready to go off, you think you've breathed your last. Now, another thing, the Golden Triangle, I've been down there plenty of times. What was her name?
It wasn't a hooker. It's a
the
part
Golden
of...
Triangle is an area in Cambodia and Vietnam.
All right.
Wake up, friend.
Well, you know...
Look at the light. But seriously, I'm a member of the... I'm a DAV member, a Veterans of Foreign War member. I'm a paid-up-for-life American Legion member. And as a member and as a veteran, I suggest that you turn yourself into the VA and
get yourself
a psychiatric evaluation. You really have a problem. One of my best friends got a Congressional Medal of Honor in World War II in combat in Belgium. And we served together in Vietnam. And he never ever said that somebody looking in the eye is going to kill him.
Let me ask you a question.
Somebody took his beer away from him.
He almost killed a man because he took his beer? What a psycho.
I said that the only time that I think that he would ever got angry at somebody is if they took a beer away from him. But he never, never, and sir, to look at your grandchildren, 5 year old, and say that you want to kill them again. As a veteran to veteran, turn yourself into the VA and get yourself a psychic evaluation.
Well, Bill, this is Phil Hendry. I think that was very well said.
What do you know about it? You're a slacker sitting over here.
Don't call me a slacker. I'm 50 freaking years old. What do you want from me? Now, I want to ask you a question.
Look, Bill, you never looked at your wife's windpipe and wanted to use it as a straw.
Never in my life. No one in the world. And let me tell you something. You talk about people. I happened to get elected in my city. And I was a councilman for 7 years. And get around people, as a politician, you shake their hands, they look you in the eye, and you look them in the eye.
You're
kidding.
Never
once did any desire come on my part to kill anybody.
What did I say that's so crazy? You're calling me crazy.
Well, that's just it. Look a man.
Well, you just said you wanted to kill your 5-year-old grandson because you thought you looked like Mickey Mouse or Donald Duck. My God, friend.
Wait a second. Are you trying to...
As a veteran, I'm asking you, and I'm pleading with you, as a member of the disabled American veterans, I have a disability. I'm retired disability.
You didn't get something blown off, did you?
Favor. Pardon?
You didn't get something blown off, did you?
Did I get something blown off? No, but I saw my friends get blown off. Thank God that God was with me every place I went.
Oh, here we go. This is another thing vets do. They start praying to God.
No. God was with me, and I didn't get hurt. I did get hurt.
Let me ask you, Bill. Beside the crack I made about my grandson, what else did I say that was crazy?
Well, first of all, I can't believe you said you were in a firefight. And that's what you said, as I recall, that you were in a firefight, and having a drum fall on your foot is not a firefight. Man, you haven't seen a firefight, and you haven't looked down at somebody trying to catch you and kill you while they're firing back at you and you're firing at them. That's a firefight.
So
not having a drum fall on your foot.
It wasn't a drum. It was a depth charge.
You were traumatized, and I believe, and as a veteran, again, I implore you, go to the VA, get yourself...
Wait a minute. My grandson's here. What? You're going to start in with that again, huh? Because I'll...
Don't you lay a hand on that kid.
Well, he's doing it again, saying I look like, this time, Porky Pig.
Okay. Listen, Bill.
Yes.
Very good. Thank you for your call.
Bill, what would you do with a kid?
Pleasure.
What would you do with your grandkid if he said you look like Porky Pig? I bet you'd want to...
You know something, what I would do? I'd laugh at him and I'd say, you know something? You might be right. And he's a kid.
He might be right. What an insult.
Okay.
My God, what's an insult from a 5-year-old? That's
calling
an insult?
You Porky Pig, a U.S.
Man, you should have heard some of the insults I had when I was running for election. Those were insults.
Well, you got a point there.
They said I was a Vietnamese veteran. They thought I was an insult. That was an insult. And you know, sir, even when they insulted me as a Vietnamese, I've never had any desire to kill him. I just laughed.
You know that
you
stick a boot up that kid's ass so far, he'd be spitting shoelaces.
I say to you, my friend,
you need a psychiatric
evaluation.
Find
Mr.
a doctor.
Mr. Henry, I
thank
wouldn't talk
much.
To this man anymore
All
because
right.
I think the man's a psycho.
He's a psycho case.
You want me to see a doctor?
Yeah.
Would a dentist do?
No, not a dentist. A doctor. A head doctor.
Not a tooth doctor.
No, that wouldn't work. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show. 1-800-449-8686. Car dealers in our next life.
...1-800-449-8686. And now more on The Phil Hendry Show.
You know, yesterday... By the way, that was me doing the voice of Lloyd. Yesterday, we had Pastor William Renick on our show. And Pastor Renick was making a point about the war in Iraq and how nobody credits the preachers and the ministers and the priests and all the men of the cloth for praying that the war came to a successful conclusion. No one credits them. They said a lot of prayers. And he was trying to make the point that for your prayers to be answered, you need a preacher to also be praying. Otherwise, your prayers to God sound like Chinese. He doesn't understand them. Anyway, a caller took exception, and here it is.
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy gold.
I want to talk to the preacher there, and I want to ask him, like, from what common sense is he talking about that nobody, that God doesn't understand any kind of languages. If I pray, who prays? An Arabic guy prays, or an American, or a Spanish guy prays. If he created them, and he knows what he created for that, unless there's one point there, is unless God is an idiot for it, that he doesn't know nothing about what he created.
We don't have to get angry and call God an idiot. We don't have to do that.
No. We didn't call a God an idiot. I'm talking about the God that you're talking about, that he doesn't understand nobody's language.
Let me say what I'm saying. Every man or woman that have children knows that they love all their children equally, but they know that one child or another child may be smarter than the other children. God, when
you're
he made...
Here, you're smarter than all natural people?
No. What I'm saying is, when God made the American man and woman, he know they smarter than everybody else. So that's why he rather people pray in English.
Listen, you're touching on a base that...
Wait a minute.
American person. I'm talking about a person alone.
Yes.
Here.
Yes.
If I go to pray to God, he doesn't understand my language. It's going to be like ting tong tong, the Korean thing that you just mentioned minutes ago.
That's right.
You know? Because you happen to know his own language.
You misunderstood me. What I'm saying is this. If you pray by yourself and there is not a preacher that you have contacted to help you pray, then you pray and sound like a bunch of Chinese.
No. Let me ask you one thing, though.
Like, if you start praying, Mark, without any preacher knowing what it is you pray about, to God it sounds like you bangy or something. He don't know.
No. What do you mean he don't know?
What do you mean he doesn't know?
You just made him look like an idiot, but whatever you're
talking
about.
No, there you go. You calling God an idiot.
You're making him look like that.
No, you just called the Lord Almighty, exalted God, an idiot.
Then you're making him look like that. And listen,
you are misunderstanding everything.
No, you're misunderstanding me here. I know that God is the Almighty, right? He knows all the things that's happening in this world. He created all of something's happening there.
He do, but
and
then he gave over.
You're contradicting every single religion in this world for whatever.
When God created the earth, then he said, now I'm going to rest. You remember in the Bible it says on the seventh day the Lord rests. And what he said on that day was, now I'm going to give over to man some of the responsibility so that I don't have to have so much responsibility. That's why now he give over to the preachers, to the ministers, to the priests as intermediary. And so I can pray to God. If you say to me, hey preacher, Pastor Renick, will you pray for my daughter so she could get well, or my son so he could go to college? I say, yes, I will. And then God hears the prayer. But if it's just you by yourself, you sound like a Chinaman. You know what you're talking about.
That's what you're telling me here, that he's not complete. He's not fully almighty. If he cannot handle whatever things and obligation that he has to do concerning to his people there, then he's not complete.
Exactly what I'm talking about.
You guys are completing him.
You don't make any sense. Right now, God's going, what in hell? What are you talking about?
I'm not talking about God.
Wait a minute. Wait, let me jump in here. I think it's a simple premise, Pastor Renick, that Mark and a lot of people are saying, and myself included, that you don't need a preacher to pray, that you can just pray.
I never said you didn't.
Well, what you're saying is I can pray, but if I don't have a preacher helping me, it sounds like Chinese.
To God, yes.
Well, that's a lot of crap. What if I'm on a deserted island and there ain't no preachers around?
Then you are in the mercy of God. That's right.
Preacher's mind.
Look at Adam.
You know what? The way you
look, I can't even understand you. How the hell you think God gonna understand you? See what I'm saying?
Listen, you should be working in 7-Eleven over there. You don't be. You shouldn't be a preacher at all.
7-Eleven? You think I'm a towel wrapper now, huh? I'm a black man, but that don't make me no turban winder. I come from the United States of America, working over 7-Eleven. I think you ought to be over 7-Eleven with a dot in the middle of your head.
All right, you know something.
What a son of a Bill, man.
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy Gold.
There you go. Pastor William Renick from Joyful Union Congregation in Bellflower, California. Thank you, Pastor. 1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Hendry Show. Coming up, we're going to have our war diary next hour. We'll tell you what's been going on. We also have Iraq's Most Talented Kid competition. And we'll talk more about other things that are in the news, including developments in Iraq And I just saw where NASCAR is, are they hooking up with Jesse Jackson? See, here's the thing about Jesse Jackson that you got to understand. Most people that I talk to don't like him. And by that, what I mean is most people that I talk to are white. And so therefore, but it's true. Am I right or am I wrong? The people that don't like Jesse Jackson are white. And there's a couple of blacks that don't like him. But the fact is, it breaks down along. It's kind of like the OJ trial. It all breaks down on racial lines. But you got to admit one thing about old Jess. He keeps the country honest. He does. He pushes stuff out there that needs to be pushed out there. And then you can debate it and you can like it or not like it. But at least he brings the stuff up. It always pisses people off, but he brings it up. Now the guy wants to get more black folks driving in NASCAR. There's a lot of black fans in NASCAR. Tons of African-American fans, especially if you go to Charlotte and places like that. You look in the crowd, there are lots of black faces up there. But there's hardly any drivers, and you need sponsors. So Jesse's working with NASCAR now, and they want to get that thing cranked, and that's pretty cool. Only problem is, every time you go to a NASCAR race, there's nothing but Confederate flags flying around. But, you know, what are you going to do? Nothing you can do about that. It's like, we'd like to get more Jews involved in the Third Reich. But first, I'm kidding. I'm not saying NASCAR's the Third Reich. Jesus, take a freaking break. Take a cigarette break, fellas. All right, 1-800-449-8686. I want to get more Jews in the Third Reich. You guys don't mind the swastika, do you? No, not at all. All right. All right, 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show will be right back.
Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
And now more on the Phil Henry Show.
So NASCAR is got to deal with Jesse Jackson, NASCAR, which stands for the National Association of Stock Car Auto Racing, for those of you who didn't know that. And what is the National Association of Stock Car Auto Racing? It's a group of drivers and owners. They drive stock cars or automobiles based upon stock American models. And these are the oval track races that we see. And it's quite exciting. It's such a typically American motorsport because it's kind of an arena-based sport with really big, fast cars. And some say that NASCAR originated in the South among moonshine runners back in the day when they were trying to outrun the Treasury agents who were trying to run them down, get their moonshine. So these guys would soup up their wheels, and those cars eventually they would race against each other. So it's a very Southern. It has deep roots in the Southern culture of moonshine and revenuers. But now, NASCAR is very interesting, especially since its association with Fox. And I would say the last few years, it has really sharpened up its image. It looks like a very cosmopolitan sport now. I don't know if you've seen it. The sponsorship, the drivers, the Jeff Gordons, these are a slicker, citified kind of guy. You know, I remember back in the day watching NASCAR, and for all of the sophistication of the automobiles, and for all of the talent of the drivers, and for all of the talent of the engineers involved and the mechanics, it still had the Junior Johnson thing going. You know, they'd interview a guy in the pit, and he's going, "Right, we're going to try to take it in and see if we can get a couple more wheels put on it, but right now it only has four, and I guess you can only drive with four wheels." Well, that's right, he's trying six. "We're going to try six. Also got, 12,000 horsepower, and we're going to try, with Buddy Baker." And those guys that always would have, they'd be in the commentator in the booth, and you're watching the race. "All right, the Daytona 500 here. And Buddy, what do you think about that?" "Well, he's doing a real good job right now." Kind of like Jackie Stewart, remember him? "Right, Jim, out there painfully evident, in the front of the car is Danny Ungaius hanging with his ass twisted in the breeze." You know, anyway, NASCAR is making an effort, and I really believe it's a bright move on their part. They can take a huge chunk of the mainstream advertising dollar in the next 20 to 50 years. I have no doubt in my mind that it will become a preeminent sport surpassing football. I honestly believe it. It's exciting, And it's the, as I've said before, auto racing is the only sport that I know that actually contributes something to the world. It's the only one I know. Because the auto races that you watch are testing grounds for what eventually gets into our passenger cars, whether it's fuel, tires, carburation, etc., just the overall engineering of the car. It's being tested on those tracks and during those races. So when you look at an auto race, you're looking at something that actually is providing something for us eventually down the road. And that in and of itself makes it a very valuable sport. And you hear these people getting these stupid conversations about our auto racers, are they really athletes? Well, who cares? Do you remember that ABC superstar competition where they get athletes to compete against each other? You know, like they would have the guy who was in track, and another guy was a baseball, and another guy's hockey, and they'd be swimming. And what was it like? Didn't Joe Frazier was in the swimming, almost drowned? I'm kidding. Anyway, I'm kidding. But they had Johnny Rutherford, who was a famous auto driver, auto racer, and he was like swimming. He came in 800 laps. You know, he was so dead. I think they had to fish him out of the water with a net. What the hell are you doing? A guy drives a car for a living. He smokes freaking Marlboros. Put him in swimming. Well, he's another athlete. Not an athlete. Freaking guy drives a car. He drives it fast. He's got a one. If the competition was whose right foot is the biggest, maybe that guy's got a shot. He's got a lead foot there. But other than that. So NASCAR, in an effort now to take it out of that rather regional paradigm and move it into a national cosmopolitan, and I think they're doing a great job. They have enlisted the aid of Jesse Jackson to recruit minorities for driving and sponsorship. And there are teams, and there have been black drivers down through the years. Willie T. Ribs, I think was his name. I hope I got the name right. What are you laughing at, Pelton? The name Ribs? What a white freaking...
What a racist.
Well, I don't know if that's his name. I think it is. And Janet Guthrie was one of the... I don't know. They've got some gal, I think, listen to me, I sound like my dad now. Some gal drove at the Indy 500 just a while back, didn't she? All those gals? I know a gal here. It's like when we were at this lesbian bar with Maria was broadcasting from this, lesbian bar. And my father-in-law comes to visit. You know, we're all watching the show. And there's nothing but women in there. And so he says to me, Phil, you know where the men's room is around here? I said, Al, your guess is as good as mine, brother. I mean, there's no signs on the door. He says, all right, okay. You know, so he goes in, and he comes in. Holy Jesus, Phil. Well, I said, what? Well, I'm standing there at the latrine, and some gal comes in. I said, how are you? She said, oh, fine. Anyway, I'm digressing. So they got Jackson. What's the problem with that? I'll tell you what the problem is. Jesse Jackson has been vocally anti-war. It's not a problem. It's not a problem. But it's a problem for some people who support NASCAR. They don't dig it. Okay, that's fine. However, they want to get him removed as a associated member of this campaign to bring minority drivers to NASCAR. Pete Flaherty, who's the president of the National Legal and Policy Center. Here's the thing. I think you have a right to write a letter. I think you have a right to write a letter. I think you have a right to an opinion. I always believe you have a right to an opinion. I think you also have a right to mount a boycott, because all of these things, thank God, in America, will be successful or unsuccessful based upon the will of the people you're appealing to. For instance, if somebody wanted to boycott the sponsors of NASCAR, and he wrote a letter to all of the sponsors and said, boycott NASCAR, the sponsors still have the freedom of choice as to whether they're going to do that or not. If somebody didn't want to have Jesse Jackson associated with NASCAR, they have a right to write a letter and say, Jesse Jackson's been vocally anti-war, and as you know, NASCAR is primarily supported by white conservative men. This is a bad move for you. I guess he has the right to do that. NASCAR has the right to say, well, you can take your letter and pound it because we're in business with Jesse Jackson. And by the way, don't you think we already know that NASCAR is supported by white conservative men? And don't you think we already know that Jesse Jackson's got an anti-war thing going on? Well, you know what? Just take it easy. We'll make our own decisions here. Well, how come you say that, Tim Robbins ought to quit crying, but, Jesse Jackson can keep his job? Tim Robbins ain't taking any food out of anybody's mouth, and nobody's taking any food out of his mouth. They didn't want him to be at Cooperstown. And what is that going to impact? Him showing Bull Durham for the 9 millionth time? God! I get it already. You wore the freaking garter belts. As opposed to Jesse Jackson leaving his association with NASCAR, that does mean something. It may mean that a huge opportunity for bringing minority drivers into NASCAR is lost. Now, having said that, maybe there's somebody better they could talk to than Jesse freaking Jackson. Holy God. Every time you get that guy's name gets brought up, somebody's got a problem with him. Don't you think that there are African-American businessmen out there with a lot of money, I mean a lot of money, who'd be willing to sponsor a black driver? Here's the problem. A lot of black, successful black businessmen don't want you to know who they are. Now, what I mean by that is they're such brilliant businessmen, they are also aware of the fact that if people knew that they were the owners of the certain business, they might have a problem with that. I mean, this country has multi-millionaire businessmen who are African-American, and you would never know it. They don't want you to know that they own this company or that company. They have a fear that there will be some prejudice involved in the consumer's reaction to that, believe it or not. But be that as it may, isn't it time that they stop going to Jesse Jackson for every bloody thing they want from the so-called black community? Not that I got anything against Jesse. I like the guy personally because he keeps this country honest. He's always bringing up some crap that we got to deal with. That's kind of cool. He's always getting somebody mad. And why does he get people mad? Because he's always bringing up something we'd rather not have brought up. So that's healthy. Beyond that, if the guy's a liability, maybe, I don't know. But I would say to NASCAR, isn't there somebody else? Isn't there a consortium of African-American businessmen that you could access for money, for sponsorship, for encouraging the development of minority involvement on the driver level, on the mechanic level, on the team sponsor level, etc.? Isn't there someone other than Jesse? Because every time they pull his name into something, somebody's having a heart attack over it. Some white boy someplace has just got a real problem. Here's my suggestion. Oprah. Now, anyway, she's got the jack, and she's loaded. But I ain't just talking about her. I mean a whole bunch of black business people. You know, Oprah's worth about, what's she worth about? She's got like five, well, I know she's a billionaire. She's probably got around 100 million, wouldn't you say? She's got to have 100 million. She's got to have that. So that's a nice start. Start with her, and he goes, got somebody else, man. Jesse, the guy, every time somebody mentions, Nipsey Russell, where's he at right now? Because I think he would be just wonderful. All right. Godfrey Cambridge, I think, is around, and we can get a lot of black. Will you knock it off in there, Pelton? I would love to. All right. 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. That number again, 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Henry Show is back.
You know, they got this thing going on in the West Bank and around the world. They want us to give back this Abu Abbas, you know, that pile of garbage that we found hiding in a rat hole in Baghdad. This is the guy that masterminded, they call it masterminded, that Achille Lauro hijacking, where an old man is 69 because he was getting under the skin of these hopped up, freaked out, whacked up, freaking Palestinian jackasses, they decided to shoot him. Nothing says more about the mindset of those individuals than that. They couldn't take the taunts of an old man in a wheelchair. They blow his brains out. Then they throw his body into the ocean. Well, the guy that masterminded that is some turd by the name of Abu Abbas that some people over there in the Palestinian territories, not the people, of course, but the leadership, they take him seriously as some kind of a diplomat. They are, quote, get a load of this, demanding that we set him loose. I said it yesterday. I want to say it again. The whole world has changed, baby. We ain't doing business the way that we used to, okay? We ain't setting anybody loose. What I would suggest you do is find a bomb shelter. We're not setting Abbas loose. We're not going to set any of these scumbags that were picking up these half-bed brothers and third cousins of Saddam Hussein, whatever inbred members of his family he's got. We ain't setting them loose either. What do you think of that? If I were you, man, I'd go duck and cover. This guy, and if they turn him over to the Italians, that you know what I'm going to do? If they turn him over to the Italians, I'm going to set myself on fire in the middle of Wilshire. I'm going to do like them Buddhist monks used to do, you know, just little cray. You give this guy to the Italians, you might as well just set him free yourself. All right, 1-800-449-8686. Hi, Mike.
Hey, hi. Just wanted to make a quick comment about the Jesse Jackson thing in racing, and the point that whether it's Jesse Jackson or any minority, anybody throwing money at a driver who's not qualified, kind of...
Who said not qualified?
Well, right at the moment, you brought up Willie T. Ribbs, and not only did he have money, Bill Cosby's money behind him, he the reason he didn't do very well and still isn't racing is he's not one of a very good driver. Period.
Right, so who said that they want to throw money at non-qualified drivers?
Well, if they're going to bring a black driver into the sport, which I'm in, there isn't any out there right now.
How do you know? How do you know?
How do I know? I'm out there every day watching.
Oh, you're riding. You're watching all the black drivers out there, huh?
Oh, black, white.
You ain't seen. How many black drivers do you watch?
Oh, probably three or four last weekend alone.
Where?
Las Vegas. I ran in Las Vegas.
All right. So this is the second tier of NASCAR? Is this, what is this, like the AAA ball of NASCAR?
And it's not just NASCAR. It's drag racing. It's all of it. It doesn't matter. If they start throwing money at unqualified people,
look at Mike.
Kills the,
you
kills
keep
the
saying unqualified people. Let me explain something to you.
Okay,
what makes all these white drivers qualified?
Not all
you know,
of
here's,
them.
Here's the I thing. Never, here, here's the thing. Work, that,
what
this
I
is what irritates
was,
me. Here's what irritates me. You know as well as I do, these guys have got to find sponsors.
And the rest of us.
All right? Okay. A qualified African-American driver. A qualified African-American driver has got to find a big-time sponsor to get him up into NASCAR. And a qualified white driver has got to find himself a big-time sponsor to get him up in NASCAR. And a freaking big-time sponsor is going to take a bigger... He's going to put his money behind a white driver first before he puts his money behind a black driver, because the black driver, there's too many risks involved. Now, as far as I'm concerned, that's affirmative action for whites.
No.
And that's been going on. That's affirmative action for whites, and it's been going on for years.
Setting or different set business setting, but not in the racing world. These people have spent their lives trying to perfect their sport.
The sponsors? The sponsor wants to make money.
Correct.
How does he make his money? Advertising his product. He doesn't give a crap about the chicken crap money that you guys make winning races.
He does give a crap about that car getting airtime. They spend a lot
absolutely.
Of money on people
absolutely.
Getting airtime.
Yeah. And so he's going
to
stick that dough.
He's going to be a good driver.
He's going to put that money. Look at Mike. You're telling me it's been open to black drivers all the way down the line, and you're going to have to sell that to somebody else, man. You know, don't bring that mess in here, brother. That hasn't been open to black drivers. This is a sport with the freaking Confederate flag plastered over everything, and a sponsor is going to take. He's going to put his money behind a white driver in that sport because it's less of a liability in terms of the public relations and the selling of that product than putting it behind a black driver. Doesn't make him a racist.
But on the other hand, if the gentleman, the driver, has worked his way up from the bottom, started young, worked his way up, learned how to drive that race car, and is good at it,
So in other words, Bill Cosby found the worst black driver he could find and threw his money behind him.
No, he found a driver that was willing to go out and drive, that had a desire to do it.
Wait a second. Are you telling me now that African-American drivers, do not have the desire to be in the sport?
Not all of them.
What do you mean, not all of them? What are you talking about, not all of them? What does that mean, not all of them? They want to stay in the minor leagues because they're happy down there eating crap? What are you talking about?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. Everybody's got the desire to move up to the major leagues, but let me tell you what. They're not all qualified.
But Willie T. Ribbs was the worst.
There's a lot of drivers go out there that are happy. White, black, Puerto Rican, doesn't matter. They go out there because they enjoy the sport.
Yeah.
They know they're not going to the next level.
Why not? Why aren't they going to the next
level? Because they're not good enough.
What if they are good enough? And if they're good enough, they get to the next level, right?
Correct.
Okay. It just so happens, in Mike's opinion, the black drivers that have come into NASCAR suck, right?
No, no. We
well, where are they, man? Where are they? Why are they not? Well, then why aren't they driving a NASCAR?
There aren't that many out there.
Wait a second. The ones that are good enough, why are they not in that sport?
The same reason that a lot of the white drivers, they don't have the sponsor.
You got it. You want
to
know why they don't have a
sponsor?
Look it. You can keep pitching that, and I'm sure there's some people are going to buy it, but I'm not. I know. I know this country and I know this culture well enough. However, if you say that they're qualified, so you're saying the playing field is equal to NASCAR?
I believe it is.
Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Bye. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
I got a thing here. This is kind of interesting. Wendell Scott. Anybody know who Wendell Scott is? Wendell Scott drove NASCAR back in the 60s. He only won one major event. December 1st, 1963, he won his only major race, a 100-mile event on a half-mile track in Jacksonville, Florida. Scott was denied the opportunity to celebrate in Victory Circle. NASCAR officials said a scoring error was responsible for allowing another driver to accept the winner's trophy. Scott doubted that explanation. Everybody in the place knew I'd won the race, he said years later, but the promoters and NASCAR officials didn't want me out there kissing any beauty queens or accepting any awards. In 1973, he suffered severe injuries in a race at Talladega, Alabama. He raced only a few times afterward. He died in 1990. Wendell Scott. Well, there's a driver who lived it. You know, he lived it. I guess he doesn't know what he's talking about, but he lived it, and he said, at least then, NASCAR didn't want him out on the track. Let me give you another example of what I'm talking about. Everybody says, this is the knee-jerk response of most white people. You know, promoting minorities or affirmative action denies the most qualified applicant a job because they're trying to promote minorities. How do you know that it doesn't go out and find the most qualified person? How do you know that that kind of hiring practice, promoting minorities or otherwise giving them a leg up, doesn't find the right guy? You ever heard of Jackie Robinson? Freaking guy was, they went out. They got a token black. Branch Rickey wanted to break the color line. He went out. He found a black guy. I'm sure there were a lot of great white guys. That's what everybody tell you. That's what if Jackie Robinson was busting in now, everybody tell you, well, there's far more qualified white players. Why don't they get a... Jackie Robinson went into the Hall of Fame. He stole home in a World Series game. You ever heard of anybody else doing that lately? He could hit. He could throw. He could run the bases. He could play defense. The guy was phenomenal. And, oh, yeah, he was a token. So sometimes you find the best guy. Maybe if it was given an opportunity, everybody'd find it. You know, they'd find the best guy more often than not. NASCAR must feel a need to develop minority interest in terms of drivers in the sport. And I think I know why. Because they've got one hell of a big black fan base. They've got a lot of black fans. And those fans, yes, it's natural, will sit up there and go, hey, kind of like to see a black driver out there. Just, you know, just for kicks. Just be interesting. And a young black fan might say, this is great. I'd like to do this someday. I want to be a driver. It's unnatural, I think, personally. I think it's odd and very unnatural to have as many African-American fans as NASCAR has got and have hardly, well, they've got no, I'm seriously, just virtually no black drivers. There's something wrong there. There's something very off about that. All right. Is that what we're going to talk about now? Everybody's flooding the lines. Okay. Here is Roy. Roy, go ahead.
Bill, I agree with you. I think NASCAR is probably
now. See,
looking...
you sound like Buddy Baker.
Why do I sound like? But let me get my point across.
Is this Buddy?
I think no. This is not Buddy. I think NASCAR is probably looking for some African American NASCAR drivers. But to the last caller's credit, there has not been any start at the bottom, work their way up, and get the qualified, get as qualified as they need to make it big in NASCAR. Period. It just hasn't happened.
Well, if you guys know the exact numbers of black drivers that are starting out in the lower levels of you know, oval track racing, and you're telling me they ain't there, then I will say to you, there's a reason why they're not there. And the reason is that they're just simply, it's been a closed sport. It's been a closed sport. It's been a sport where, because black folks, like white folks, dig to see fast cars going around a track.
Right.
They love the sport. I mean, they come out and they watch it, you know. And probably somewhere out there in America, there's a bunch of African-Americans on a Friday night running their cars. And why is that? Because traditionally, the white avenues, the white arenas have been closed off. I mean, it's just a fact, man. It's a fact. Nobody's saying that NASCAR is racist. I'm not saying it's a great sport. I love it. And I think they're making a great effort here to open the sport and say, look, you know, we would like to have drivers of color. We got a lot of fans of color, and I think it's a natural interest on their part. Nobody says we want to see blacks dominate the sport or anything else, but where the hell are they, and why are they not knocking on the door? We know they're out there. We know they love the race. We know they love the sport. What's the story here?
To your credit, I think you're right. I think there's a lot of the big-time sponsors that won't back, you know, that part of the, you know, the drivers. They won't back those black drivers because, you know, like you said, there's never... Traditionally, there's not any one black person that has made it big at NASCAR, and I think they're getting into that. But you know, at the same time, you said that they can't go out and do it. If you believe that they can do it, why don't you back them? Why don't
Who,
you
me?
Pick one of them and back them?
I'm made of money, man. Hey, here you go. Okay, Roy, this will show you how smart I am. Remember, I said that they got a hell of a lot of black fans in NASCAR.
Mm-hmm.
5%.
5% are African-American.
Yeah, estimated. Well, that's good. That's a good start.
Yeah. Well, look at the fan base. So, have you ever been to a NASCAR race?
Well, yes, I have, and I see a lot of African-American fans there.
There are a lot of them, but most of them are, you know,
white
they had
folks.
That big deal about having the redneck on the Jeff Foxworthy thing. The NASCAR appeals to the rednecks.
Well, but that's changing, man, because... the sport now has a very cosmopolitan look. I think it's got a slick look. It's got, you know, the Jeff Gordons of the world have kind of brought it into the, you know, that Hollywood limelight look. I ain't saying that that's necessarily good. I think it's cool. I think it makes the sport more promotable. I think it makes it more attractive to sponsors. I think you're going to get, I don't know, you may get a freaking champagne sponsor if it looks smooth enough.
That's exactly right. And NASCAR... will do everything they can to promote. They're one of the best businesses out there that promote their product.
They're a bunch of racists. I'm kidding. All right, man. Thanks, Roy.
All right.
See you later. Bye. Here I am with my big fat mouth, and all of a sudden, 5%. CART has an African American driver development program. But according to this article that I'm reading here, and is this off the NASCAR site? No, it's just about NASCAR. It's going to take more than diversity initiatives and one driver for auto racing to shake its Confederate flag-loving image. But the industry is trying. African Americans should take advantage of current opportunities. Of the 63 million NASCAR fans, an estimated 5% are black. This may be one sport where fans can't wait for a Tiger Woods or a Venus and Serena Williams to... Oh, Jesus, you had to bring them up? to change the game. Experts say to attract black fans, the sport needs black drivers. But to get companies to sponsor black drivers, existing fans must be more visible. I think there's more than 5%, man. I've been to NASCAR events. I see them all over the place. Okay, anyway. 1-800-449-8686. So Jesse Jackson, he's just the guy to do it, huh? Boy, you want to get even more white fans into the sport, have Jesse show his mug around there. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. 1-800-449-8686.
one 800 449 8686. And now more on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, I want to find out if you can determine paternity of a baby by the baby's DNA, and because of the situations going on with Lacey Peterson right now. 1-800-449-8686, because I'm ghoulishly interested in it like the rest of you are. All right, let's go over here to Gene. Hi, Gene.
Hi.
How are you? Good, ma'am. And you're on the air.
Okay. We have one black driver where I race at San Antonio Speedway.
And you're a driver too?
Yes, sir. I'm a minority female driver.
A minority female driver. And where do you race?
At San Antonio Speedway.
Okay, cool. And you race NASCAR, or not NASCAR, you race stock cars?
Yeah, and NASCAR Weekly Racing Series.
Okay.
And he's just as good as anybody else, but, you know, black drivers and female drivers, we have to work a little harder at getting the sponsors.
And because they look at you and they say what?
Well, like they look at me and kind of laugh, a female driving a race car.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I got blonde hair, you know, and...
I know, I'm looking at you right now.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I'm on your Thunder Valley Racing, is that it?
Yeah, I'm on that site too.
And you're Gene Nesser?
Yes.
And you race NASCAR Weekly Racing Series, yeah.
Yes, sir, I'm the only female racing at that track.
So every week you got to go out there, and there they are looking at you like, are you back? Right?
Yeah. They tried to, the first year I raced, you know, they try and do whatever they can to get you out.
Yeah.
But I've been going back there for 5 years now, so.
Now, you eventually want to ride on the big tracks with the big guys?
Yeah, I'd like to.
But you need to get a spot.
It takes a lot of money.
But also, isn't it equally true that you have to win a lot of races for a sponsor to go, hey, you know what, I'm gonna slap my logo on that car?
Yes, to have the driving skills on the track, yes, that's one of the main things. And
yeah,
also the other thing, like for a major corporation, they look at not only your driving skills on the track,
right,
but your personality, you know.
Well, you would be totally, you know, you're cute.
I was told I was a marketing goldmine.
Absolutely.
I don't have any sponsors.
All you got to do is get out there and win a bunch. Have you won a lot of races?
I've won 5.
How long have you been racing?
Since 98.
Since 1990. Well, 98. five races. I'm kidding. Now, can I ask you something?
Uh-huh.
When a car goes too fast and I'm in it, I get scared. How can I defeat that fear? All right, forget it. I would love to race cars, but I have and I think I'd be very good at it, Gene, but I've got this fear of going over 50 miles an hour. Is there anything I could do about that? All right, moving along.
I think it's in your blood.
Moving along. So you need to win, so you've won 5 races since 98. Is that a lot?
It's not really. I mean, we have some drivers that they got the money behind them. They go out and they win all the time.
Well, when you say money, that means they've got a fast car.
Well, they have a good car that, you know, they're not worried about having to wreck. They have a spare engine. They have a spare body.
Right.
You know, I don't have this because I don't have the sponsors.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you have a sponsor? I mean, do you have any money behind you? You must if you're racing this stuff every week.
Well, I had sponsors in the past, but like this year I'm having problems finding sponsors.
Okay,
even though I will be, you know, competing for the the short track division on a regional and national level.
Well, I can tell you this is the longest I've ever talked about NASCAR on my show. Hey, I'm on your website now, Gene. Nesser Racing Incorporated. Boy, you are beautiful.
Thank you.
Go to Nesser Racing Incorporated. You can check out Gene here. Although somebody messed up with your photograph and they blacked out one of your teeth. I'm kidding. So she's here. There's a picture of her there. There's also some nude shots, so that's very nice.
No.
I'm joking. She doesn't. But there's also a picture of your car, and you can go and check out Gene there. All right, Gene. What an easy way to get a plug, huh?
Yeah. Well, now, I also started the nonprofit corporation last year.
What are you going to do, plug that too?
Okay, yeah, what's the name I raise of it? Money for children's charities.
Okay, what's it called? Nesser
Racing for Kids.
All right, we'll check that out too. Thanks for calling us.
All right, thanks.
Bye. There she is, Gene Nesser. Make a man's hand sweat. I'm kidding. She's fine. She's, you know, cute. All right, 1-800. She's not a good looking at my wife, but no, she's very pretty. All right, 1-800. I better say that. Anyway, 1-800-449-8686. God, she started her racing career in 98. Okay. And you're on the Phil Hendry Show here as we, I guess we got into this whole NASCAR thing based on Jesse Jackson. I don't really want to go any further with it. Okay, now, DNA testing facts. And this is relative to the Lacey Peterson disappearance and whether or not the bodies that were found in San Francisco Bay are those of Lacey Peterson and her unborn son. It is important to remember when collecting DNA specimen for a paternity test that your DNA is exactly the same throughout your body. DNA taken from your blood for paternity testing is identical to that taken from a mouth swab. Mouth swabs are painless and easy to use. You can collect your own specimen at your own convenience. The mother does not need to be tested, obviously. We know whether or not the baby came from her. We compare the, and when I say we, this is some DNA testing center. We compare the child's genetic markers to those of the alleged fathers. If they match, we can calculate a probability of paternity. If they do not match, then he cannot be the biological father of the child. The mother is not necessary for this process. Is it any wonder this guy's gone missing since the body's turned up? Because all they got to do is get a little bit of his blood or a mouth swab or something. Where is he? And why didn't the cops have him under surveillance? Did the cops really honestly say we don't know where he is? And I'm not necessarily blaming the Modesto cops. You know, how many cops have they gotten? Do they have one for full-time surveillance? Can they get help from the FBI? Can they get assistance from the county sheriff? Can they get a little bit of love from the highway patrol? Is there anybody out there? You got a kind of a high-profile a possible murder case. Maybe they could get a little bit of love going from some of their associated police things. They don't know where he is. What is it? Why do we have such a hard time keeping track of people? Bin Laden, Hussein, Scott What's-His-Ass. What is going on? Can we just find one guy? Just one guy. Just one of the three I'd like to find. Either Hussein, Bin Laden, or just for kicks, this Peterson slob. I've given up on Bin Laden. I don't even care. As far as I'm concerned, he's lying on a table someplace waiting for the dialysis machine. Hussein, it would be a kick, but did you see they pulled in his half-brother? Boy, he's even uglier than his half-brother. Half-brother? What a bunch of Iraqi hillbillies.
Say, I got my half-brother. He's going to go on into Syria.
They're just, that's all they are. They're just a long line of Iraqi hillbillies.
My half-brother, he run Iraq. Me, I'm going to Syria.
Yeah, okay, Gomer. Gomer Hussein. Come and listen to a story about a man named Tariq. So they got this guy, and apparently he's got a bad temper. Now, he was the head of the secret police in Iraq, and if you look at the guy, he looks like about the ugliest guy you ever saw in your life, and he's got a bad temper, and he just gets all upset with people if they don't do what he asks. Well, guess what? Now he's in the custody of the United States Marines. I'd love to see him lose his temper now. Go ahead, lose your temper now, fathead. This freaking guy's got more forehead on him. I mean, I know you're going bald, buddy, but geez, what do you want me to do, bust out the projector? Start showing Gone with the Wind on your head? Yeah, go lose your temper now with the Marines, brother. Let's see what happens. Go get upset that you got arrested. Get all pissed off. By the time they get done wringing you out like a washcloth, like a wet rag. By the time they get done squeezing you dry, you are going to be everybody's girlfriend over there. That's the Emmis, my man. God, I thought I just saw Dr. Laura on the Alan Combs show. That's not Dr. Laura. That's it's Cheech Marin. I'm sorry. Okay, 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.